And be seated. Good afternoon. We are continuing on with our arguments today. I'm Michael Gibbons with Judge Bonnie Bulla and Judge Deborah Westbrook. Our next case on the calendar is 86068-COA, Clark versus White, the time set for the oral argument. And we have Mr. Paul Ray appearing for the appellant. Welcome. And Ms. Erica Pike Turner appearing for the respondent. Welcome. Okay, as you might have heard earlier, we have three family law cases on today, and each one has a little different issue. And we're really looking forward to hearing the arguments on this case, too. Mr. Ray, do you want to reserve any time for a rebuttal?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes and any remaining time.
Okay. All right, 2 minutes plus. All right, we have anything else before we start?
Well, we appreciate all of the attorneys who take pro bono cases. It's important to representation for those who need representation, and thank you.
Thanks, Judge Westbrook.
No, I again echo Judge Bullis' sentiments. Thank you both.
Okay. One note of caution, you were sitting in the last argument. You might have noticed when the heating and cooling system comes on, there's a fan and it's quite loud. It tends to drown people out, even when you're only 8 feet away from us. So always speak up, particularly if you hear that fan come on. And we'll try to do the same and use the microphones too. Go ahead, Mr. Ray. Nice to see you in the courtroom. It's usually at social events, so
that's true. The bar and there's bar events.
Are you doing any recruiting today for the Clark County Bar while you're here?
Yes, anyone who wants to join is welcome.
Are you a member, Ms. Turner?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. Please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Paul Ray. I represent Carl Clark, the appellant. Clark asked the court to recognize that Respondent White abducted the child in this case and that White's abduction is not excused. Clark asked the court to reverse the district court's June 1st, 2022 order and to reverse the district court's November 22nd, 2022 first amended decree of custody because of two prejudicial errors under the best interest test. First, the district court erred by interpreting NRS 200.3592 as excusing White's admitted abduction of the child from June 2020 through January 2022. Second, the district court erred by reopening domestic violence allegations dismissed by the 2022 temporary protective order proceedings under the Nance, McMonagall, and Castle cases to modify primary custody without new evidence and without clear and convincing evidence. The relevant facts are as follows. As after 4 years of living together with Clark on April 30th, 2020, White obtained temporary custody of the child through an ex parte temporary protective order based on domestic violence allegations from April 29th, 2020. The police report said that White did not appear injured or show signs of struggle. She told the police she only called the police because she wanted her stuff back and wanted to get back in her apartment. After the alleged incident, White wanted to wait outside her locked apartment.
Mr. Ray, didn't she also report she had bruises?
There were bruises on her wrist, which were consistent with Mr. Clark's testimony that he was holding her wrists in defense. And she wanted to wait outside the locked apartment rather than seek protective shelter when she knew Clark had the car and could return to pick up his belongings. The domestic violence master stated at the May 27, 2020 TPO return hearing that he did not believe White's testimony about her central allegation that Clark held a knife to her throat. White admitted that Clark did not hit her. The master suggested Clark to file a custody action. Then White moved out of state with the child and—
Mr. Ray, didn't the hearing master also find that there was an act of domestic violence that occurred or a threat of domestic violence existed when the TPO was entered?
Or a threat, that's right. That was, but he did not find that there was an act of domestic violence. I don't believe that's exactly how you said it is my understanding.
He might not have considered the holding the knife to the throat as being credible.
Right.
But he did find that there was an act of domestic violence or a threat of it.
Yes, or a threat. That's true. I agree. That's what I thought that said also.
Which is why he entered the TPO.
Yes, that's true. And so then Clark filed his complaint for custody on June 22nd, 2020. And the next day, June 23rd, the district court entered a preliminary injunction against unauthorized relocating the child. The July 6, 2020 TPO hearing included discussion of Clark's filed custody complaint. The domestic violence master provided for Clark's visitation rights to the child by daily phone contact. At the August 13, 2020 TPO hearing, the master found that White had disconnected her phone and email, purposely denying Clark telephone visits with the child in violation of the extended TPO. The master vacated the TPO and dismissed the TPO action. Clark had to serve White by publication with the custody action, which he did. After Clark submitted repeated default judgment papers between November 20 and June 2021, the district court sua sponte entered the October 26, 2021 decree of custody. The court found White to have abducted the child and to have made false allegations of Clark committing domestic violence. The court concluded that 7 of 8 non-neutral factors of the best interest test favored Clark and therefore granted Clark sole custody. At the April 18, 2022 hearing, White admitted that she abducted the child from June 2020 to January 2022. Yet the district court focused on questions about Clark. In the June 1st, 2022 order, the district court gave primary custody to White without evaluating the best interest factors. After the August 27, 2022 evidentiary hearing and trial, the district court entered its November 27, 2022 first amended decree of custody. The district court excused White's abduction and found Clark had committed domestic violence. The only new evidence was similar to White's testimony being unbelievable, as the domestic violence master had found. White had picked Clark up at the airport in January 2022.
But why did there have to be new evidence of domestic violence when the prior custody order had been vacated under Rule 60B-6?
Well, there was no finding under Rule 60B-6, so that's one of my other arguments. But if I understand your question, I have to think about that.
Well, Ms. White moved for relief to lift the custody order that had been put in place, the default custody order. She moved for relief. I know it's a form, but she moved for relief under 60B, correct?
Yes.
And her motion was granted.
Yes.
There are really only two custody orders that this court entered in this case. The first one was the default custody order in favor of Mr. Clark. And then the second one was after the default decree, the custody decree was lifted.
Yes.
And then there was a full evidentiary hearing. And then the court entered its decision. Is that right?
I'm not sure I understood quite the way you said it, but my understanding is the second custody decree was after the evidentiary hearing?
Yes.
Okay, yes. I think there's only two. I think that's right.
Right.
And after the first one was vacated. So there was no custody decree in effect at the time the court entered its custody order in 2022.
So we're trying to understand why modification would have applied under these circumstances, since there was no decree in effect.
Well,
was vacated.
Well, it's true that there's only a form of Rule 60, but I think Rule 60 still applies, even though it's just a form. And there's no basis stated. There's no finding of mistake, inadvertence, surprise, excusable neglect, newly discovered evidence, fraud, or other justifiable reason. So, for example, and the district court did not apply the best interest of the child factors to modify the primary custody in the June 1st, 2022 order. The court just handed over custody to the only person who was undisputed had abducted the child with no best interest analysis and no Rule 60 analysis.
Let's turn to the abduction issue because you started with that, and it's clear that that is a major concern or a major issue for your client.
Yes.
Why, even if the criminal statute doesn't apply, why couldn't the district court have decided that Ms. White had rebutted the issue by the fact of the domestic violence that existed?
I don't know if she could have or not. It's not what she did. That's the thing that I'm working with. I think that the factors, though, for under the best interest factors, there's got to be an evaluation of the abduction statute and also the factor, and also the domestic violence factor. And they have their own standards, and one of which is clear and convincing evidence. And we contend there's not clear and convincing evidence.
So if the domestic violence issue is addressed as a best interest factor, what is the standard of review by the district court when addressing domestic violence as a best interest factor, not as a rebuttable presumption?
Okay. I don't know for sure, but I think it's abuse of discretion, which also, if there's legal error, it would be de novo. That's all I know about that as far from the cases I've looked at.
Well, that's certainly our standard of review, but what would the district court be looking at?
I think the district court, well, for example, as to the domestic violence, it's going to have to find clear and convincing evidence to even weigh that factor as a positive or a meaningful factor that's not neutral.
But what I believe Judge Bull is referring to is in the statute, you have subsection 4, and it has A through L, or all those factors there. One of those is domestic violence. So it's a general best interest factor. So all of those factors have the general review under preponderance of the evidence. Has it been established by preponderance of the evidence? Subsection 5 is the presumption, which is clear and convincing evidence. So to invoke the presumption, you have to present clear and convincing evidence. But even if you don't present it, if you still present the lower standard, the court could find domestic violence and just not apply the presumption. You know, that's the point to be made, because it's two different standards are being used in this case by the district court.
So, okay, I misunderstood that.
Preponderance of the evidence for the general best interest and clear and convincing for the presumption of domestic violence. You know, it's the custody should not be awarded.
So I don't think you asked me a question. You were telling me, I appreciate that.
Well, I'm just trying to focus the argument here. And of course, then we're looking, did the district court abuse its discretion? You know, that's our general review. There's maybe a statutory question regarding the criminal statute and its application here. But you indicated that the court, in your introduction here, shouldn't have reopened the whole domestic violence issue, and the abduction standards were improperly, or the abduction was improperly excused by using the criminal statute.
Yes. Well, the criminal statute does apply under the abduction best interest factor. It cites to that statute. So it is the one that governs. And so I think we have to follow. It's true that it's not a criminal proceeding. So the outcome is not whether someone's going to be imprisoned or do a plea deal or something, but it's going to directly affect the custody.
Mr. Ray, doesn't the criminal statute establish what constitutes an abduction, as opposed to what constitutes something that rebuts the presumption of not having custody for the parent to abduct?
Yes, I think so. And so,
it's your position that the criminal statute applies to rebutting the presumption, or does it just apply to whether abduction happened?
Whether abduction happened, and the key is the relocation and the fact that there was a custody order in place. And therefore, subsection 2 is not an excuse because it doesn't apply to that situation.
But why couldn't the district court consider the reason why the mother left, being domestic violence, as a basis to rebut the presumption after it found that abduction happened?
Well, Okay, so if I understand your question, there is an abduction, we're assuming.
Right, the court found that the abduction happened. The court found that the abduction happened.
Okay.
So regardless of the application of NRS 200-359, why couldn't the court consider the mother's reason for leaving with the child as a basis to rebut the presumption that she not have custody?
Interesting question. I don't know. I don't remember that in the cases or the statutes, but that isn't what happened here. So I would suggest that it should be, if that was the court's intent, it should be clarified because that was not stated. And in fact, it was the opposite. The court said it's excused. So therefore, I find there's no abduction, which was prejudicial error because it affected so many of the factors. It affected nearly all the factors between that and domestic violence. Also affected the factors. This is a good time for me to pause.
Okay. If you want to reserve time, I guess you better stop there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ray.
Good afternoon, for the record.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. So I know you have your argument set, and we're not going to interrupt at the beginning of your argument, but just make sure that you address the main points that Mr. Ray raised about whether abduction was improperly excused and whether the domestic violence was reopened. Of course, he talked about NRCP 60B too.
Yes, Your Honor. I do want to reframe things a bit because there has been a jump to a different standard by the appellant, and it is to have this court make a determination of the credibility of my client. And that is not this court's place. It's not to step in the shoes of the district court who sat and made extensive notes in her order about what she observed and the substantial evidence that was presented to her where Ms. White described how she had suffered domestic violence. And if we take that to the factors, Your Honor, you're right. With respect to the Section 4 factors, domestic violence is to be considered. In fact, the cases that were cited are for the proposition. It must be considered within those factors. Then we get to Section 5, where there was a determination upon clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Clark should not get custody because of domestic violence that was shown through the substantial evidence. Then you have the Section 7, the abduction. There was never any question. Ms. White was very forthright, saying, I left the day I was locked out of my apartment with my daughter who was in her underwear. We left and we didn't come back for a year. And
didn't she say she left after she got the TPO?
She got the TPO and left. And never saw him again after.
TPO included a custody order to her, didn't it?
It did, Your Honor. It included an order giving her primary custody and requiring her to provide daily phone calls to father. She denied him those phone calls. She frustrated his efforts to have visitation pursuant to that order. There was never any dispute about that from Ms. White. She admitted it. And so then you can't just read the first half of that Section 7 factor, though.
That's different than admitting to abduction. And Judge Westbrook asked a question about the definition, you coming from the criminal statute, so whether that was met.
It was in the order. The judge certainly looked at it as if the abduction is for the purpose of denying visitation or custody, then custody should not be with mom. She found the 5 in favor of mom, 7 in favor of dad. And then she said, but I find there is clear and convincing evidence that there was, that the abduction, and she did include that entire event together, but that was as a result of the domestic violence. Now that section, the the statute that was provided 203592 that rebuts the abduction in the criminal statutes, that has to be an appropriate use of the law. There's no error of law. The only question is whether the judge abused her discretion by saying, all right, I have clear and convincing evidence over here and clear and convincing evidence over here. How am I going to resolve that? And her findings that are based on substantial evidence, if this were to be sent back, it wouldn't be sent back so that the original default decree could be in effect. It would be for her to, explain further where the kids should go, when she said already clear and convincing evidence of DV and abduction.
I apologize for interrupting, but I just want to, I don't want to get away from the abduction issue.
Yeah.
Because I think the appellant's concern is that the criminal statute should not have applied because it only applies where a parent has joint legal and physical custody. And that's where you can get the rebuttal part or the rebuttable presumption that the abduction was justified or was excused. But that's not what happened here, because the custody that would have been in effect at that time, mom had primary custody. But that doesn't mean that the court couldn't consider factors to rebut the abduction, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And I suppose because mom had primary custody previously, she had joint custody as of the date of the evidentiary hearing. She never, father never had sole custody at the time of the abduction or the time of the evidentiary hearing. It was either primarily or joint with mom.
When the abduction allegedly occurred or did occur, because I think mom acknowledged she was candid with the court, she had primary custody.
She did.
At that time.
She did. And she had primary. So I guess my note is, where else would the judge go to make this determination of where this child goes? You have two parents fighting for custody, and there is a finding on substantial evidence. She applied the criminal statute, not by preponderance. She didn't shoehorn it into the Section 4 factors. She looked at the criminal statute and applied it when there was either primary or joint applicable. Primary when there was the abduction, joint at the time of the hearing, and said there is clear and convincing evidence under this Section 2. Now,
so I think what you're saying is there were two presumptions, one in favor of mom, one in favor of dad, and
yes,
mom rebutted the presumption against her because she established that domestic violence was the reason for why she did what she did.
That's right, Your Honor. And
so you had competing, clashing presumptions, and somehow they had to be resolved, and that was the method.
That's it, Your Honor. What a unique set of circumstances when you have competing presumptions like that, but the judge resolved it with a finding of clear and convincing evidence. If you're going to resolve it at all,
And the question about the criminal statute is, this sort of helps focus where you are on this, but it was the actual evidence that presented about domestic violence and not the criminal statute was tangential to it, I think is what you're saying.
That's right. It was looking for a standard that made sense. I believe it wasn't argued by either side who were appearing pro per, but certainly the Section 7 factor it is a presumption to be rebutted. And there isn't any case or statute that provides a greater threshold than what was applied here by the district court judge, where it was you have to tie the abduction and the denial of the phone calls to the domestic violence.
So I think you're saying then it's a factual argument subject to a substantial evidence, therefore abuse of discretion review in front of us.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's not really a legal question about how do you use the criminal statute.
Right, Your Honor. The criminal statute, it was just a mechanism for the factual findings to be met. So if there was no citation to the criminal statute and the district court had just said, I saw substantial evidence, it was clear and convincing to me that this woman suffered domestic violence. And as a result of that, the presumption under Section 7 has been rebutted. Would there be any difference? This is...
Of course, Mr. Ray argued never should have gotten to that point because of the 60B was improperly used to set aside the decree, and therefore the issue of reopening the whole domestic violence shouldn't have happened, I think is what he's saying.
Yeah, I understood it the same way, Your Honor. And when you have a default decree and there's a Rule 60 motion that is timely, and the court heard sworn statements from both sides and said, I'm setting it aside. Well, one, the default decree, it specifically said that it was meant to be temporary until both parents could be in front of the court. And two, Rule 60B1, mom cited misconduct in her motion, and that rule is for the purpose of serving the public policy of having decisions on the merits. And there was a decision on the merits here.
Is it correct that dad knew where mom was prior to the entry of the default decree?
It was undisputed evidence that mom had reached out to him before the default decree had been entered. They had regular phone calls with the child. And by the time that the child had been picked up and there had been a pickup order entered, mom had let the child see dad. And this is why dad was able to take the pickup order and go to mom's work in Las Vegas, Nevada, and have the police go to take the child. Where the child, you saw the court's comments, the district court's comments at the hearing, saying you took the child out of state without court permission. You know, that could be construed as an abduction. That's when she said, get the child back to Nevada. So, Your Honor, I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Well, Mr. Ray started to talk about NRCP 60B and the portions that didn't apply, but do you know about subsection 6, which is the catch-all provision?
Right, Your Honor, and it's that catch-all that underscores the public policy. I believe I cited it in the brief. I apologize.
The district court just didn't do very much in the way of findings.
No, Your Honor, but it's a 60B. It was an abuse of discretion to have a decision on the merits on a timely Rule 60 motion. Mom came in the very next day after the pickup order was effectuated, and she learned of the case. That was a timely motion where there was a demonstration of misconduct.
Was dad served with the motion?
Dad appeared at the hearing remotely the first day and then in person the second day. There were two hearings on the motion before the order was entered in June. So in April, two hearings on that motion.
Dad did not file an opposition to that motion.
Dad did not file an opposition.
What was dad's argument in front of the district court?
I don't know that there was an argument, but I will say it was an order shortening time without an order, where the judge just looked at the exigencies and got everybody in front of her. So we argued, we mentioned there was no opposition, but there was certainly argument and positions taken at the two hearings. So there was due process here, Your Honor, where Mr. Clark was heard. He got to swear himself or be sworn in, make his statements, make his arguments, and the transcript was clear that the judge heard Mr. Clark.
If this was not a modification of custody, and really the first custody order entered, regardless of whether the default decree was temporary or vacated. The court could have considered the findings in the TPO in determining custody, determining the custody order.
I think Nance and Castle, if the court had disregarded those determinations, that would have been an abuse of discretion. I think the court had to consider those. It was before her.
Did you hear the last argument?
I caught just a little bit of it. Yeah.
That was
yeah
one of the issues in that case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you, Mr. Ray. Not much time left, so we'll let you go at it and
thank you.
Ask anything unless we have to.
Thank you. The policy that is very important to protect here is we're talking about the best interest of the child, not the best interest of the parents. And what has happened is Mr. Clark has been denied access to his daughter. It's not, yes, it's sad for him, but the purpose of that policy is to benefit the child so the child has access to her parents. As to these, just quickly, the questions you asked earlier, the abduction, there was no finding of abduction. There was indisputable evidence of abduction, and to rule that it's excused is contrary to the statute. The statute doesn't say you can just ignore it or rebut it when you're not even considering it, because the court said it doesn't even matter. She didn't say, I'm going to consider it, or I'm going to consider it rebutted. There were no best interest factors applied in setting aside the first decree of custody, and the TPO master dismissed the TPO. That's dismissed with prejudice now at this point, or at least it's over with. It was definitely not adjudicated in favor of the mother, so there's no binding effect to support the mother on that. And the reason he dismissed it is because she absconded. She was, and he specifically said that she purposely denied his visitation rights. And that's why the abduction statute is there, to protect those rights. The idea of where mom, knowing mom was where the when the decree entered, that's disputed. That's a one-sided assertion. And why I brought up the policy is because it really shouldn't come down to that. It should come down to what's the best interest of the child. If it's coming down to just whether he knew where she was. But factually, we know she had absconded. She was not allowing him to see her. He did not know her address. He didn't have any way of serving her personally. There's no evidence in the record of that.
But he did know where she was located before the divorce decree, the judgment itself, was entered.
No. Oh, no. In October 21?
Right.
No, he did not.
Before the child was picked up, he
Mr. Ray, before the default decree of custody was entered, I think it was November?
Yes, or October. Actually.
Or October. Before the decree was entered, Mr. Clark knew where mom was because they had engaged in discussions, not before the clerk's entry of default was entered. I understand that at that point he may not have known, but actually before the default judgment was entered, he knew.
No, there's no evidence of that. No evidence at all of that. My understanding is that is absolutely not correct.
Can you point to some place in the record that could help us on this issue?
The due diligence, he tried. She moved out of the apartment. That was what the absconding was.
No, so I know he had to serve her by publication. I agree that he did not know at
so
that point.
I misunderstood your question.
Right.
Okay.
I understand at that point he did not know where she was. I understand that. I'm talking about because the default decree wasn't entered for about a year or so later, correct?
That's true, but he did not know where she was until she disclosed it to him shortly before she came and picked him up at the airport, which again is very inconsistent with domestic violence. Why do you go and let him stay for 5 days?
Do you know whether or not at that point the divorce decree, the default decree was entered in his favor?
At that point, it was, yes.
Okay. So you're saying at the time the default decree was entered, he did not know?
Where she was.
She was.
Right, right.
Okay.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Any other questions?
Only if somebody has a record cite on that point, because the two of you said completely different things on that issue.
So I can get one for her testimony about when.
I could make short trip this, I think, if you'll permit me to speak.
I've got the citation here.
Okay.
The court asked for.
Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you.
Okay, thank you.
Why don't you both give each other a little bit of grace here, and,
yes,
and you can both speak. Okay. Mr. Ray, why don't you speak first, because you have the citation, and okay. Then...
Thank you. So it was from the April 18th, 2022 hearing, and there was the, that's where the testimony was that Ms. White said that she was, she had left, and she, there's no indication that she told him where she was. I can get you that exact citation. If you wanted Ms. Turner to speak, maybe I could hunt for the exact page while she's
speaking. That's at an earlier point in time, so that's not the time we're talking about. At the day that the court entered the default decree or default findings and gave him custody, sole custody.
My understanding, as near as I can tell, he did not know that. I don't know of any evidence that says he did.
Thank you, Mr. Ray.
I do think there's two different orders. So you have the default decree. In the transcript at the evidentiary hearing of October 2022, Ms. White testified that and provided the text messages with Mr. Clark from August of 2021. They were in contact, but he did not know where she was. It was in January of 2022 that he stayed with her and the child. And then the pickup order, and that was entered subsequent to that. And his motion to obtain a pickup order. So it was subsequent to him knowing where she was that he went and executed the pickup order.
Just add a citation that I was looking for. That was the appellant's appendix, page 236 through 237 and page 253. That's where she admits that she had left. And my reaction to what Ms. Turner said is that, again, I think in one sense, it's interesting pro bono experience here because maybe it's always that way, but I haven't done this type of law before. But in one sense, it seems to me that everyone in this entire situation is concerned, should be concerned about is the best interest of the child. And that's why I think you all have quite a job to say that it has to be hashed out all these different ways and to know what is the best interest of the child. But as I mentioned, the access to the parents is very important. That's what's very important to my client.
All right. That's sounds like we're back to argument now.
Thank you all.
Thank you both very much. Excellent job. Both of you had a great command of the proceedings that happened below, which were quite convoluted, and helped fill in some of the gaps there for us. And they raised the legal arguments well, too. So thank you, Mr. Ray, for taking this as your, I don't know if this is your first pro bono case with us.
Yes.
Or your first family law case.
Family law pro bono case.
Okay. Well, we never would have known. So great job.
Thank you.
Okay. And then I assume, Ms. Turner, you're doing this a lot more.
You know, I am not a family law practitioner, and this is I think an interesting exercise to learn a new area of law. You can do it on your own time. Mr. Ray and I were talking about it. So I've been trying to take one a year now.
We had both done cap cases before that.
Well, thank you both. We really appreciate it.
All right, this matter will stand submitted.